At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Hello and welcome. We are live. That's what it tells us right as things really start popping off here. We're live at the Motor1.com Test Car Happy Hour. My name is Seth Miersma. I'm the editor-in-chief of Motor1.com. And joining me today, I have these two lovely, intelligent, and talented gentlemen surrounding me, Mr. Jeffrey Perez, Mr. Brett T. Hello. Evans. Hi, guys.
I'm hey. Lovely. Jeff is intelligent and talented.
Oh, wow. I think all of those modifiers reflect both of you. So, hi guys. Really happy. Sorry,
another Thursday.
I know. It's been a busy one, and thinking a lot about podcasts today, including and especially this one. So, we're glad to be back. We've got a ton of cars to talk about today. We've got a dad car list that I'm really excited to talk about after whiffing on it last week. If you guys did in fact join us last week, specifically to hear about the supercars for dads, I apologize. Hopefully you're back now, and we will hit that at the end of the show. In the meantime, as ever, no matter where you're watching this, YouTube, Facebook, Twitter, you can leave us a comment. You can ask us a question. If we like it, and we often do, we'll throw it up on the screen. We'll say hello, and we will engage. So without further ado, Jonathan Brown, great to have you back. Been a while. Always enjoy your show. Thank you. Yes, thank you, sir, for joining. We love seeing you. And your fellow very active commenters on the show. So why don't we start with, well, we were just talking about the Hyundai, right? Like when we were leading up to the show, Jeff's been in a Hyundai Elantra Hybrid. That was our Motor One value car of the year 2 years ago in 2021. He took home the hardware in that category the first year that we were handing out hardware for our yearly Star Awards. And you've had a little refresher this week, eh, Jeff?
Yeah, I've got the Elantra this week, the hybrid, fully loaded, limited. It's even got the, I just looked right now, they charge $450 for white paint, but that's, you know, like the only bad thing about this car. I love the Elantra hybrid. There's a reason it won our Star Awards, because it is just such a good little car. It's so nice to drive. The interior is awesome. I think the design is really great. They kind of did that really bold approach with this one, and I think it works. And then the hybrid obviously is like arguably one of the best in this segment, although I don't think the Civic hybrid is out yet now, the new one. So this one gets 49 in the city, 52 highway, and 52 combined.
Wow.
And I got in this car when they dropped it off, and the range meter said over 500 miles, which I don't think I've seen in a long time on a car when I got inside.
Not since I've been in a diesel something, right? Like, have I seen over that? That's crazy.
Yeah,
super impressive.
It's crazy, but it's just a really, really nice car. It's not super sporty. I mean, if you want that, you can get the Elantra N, which is also an awesome car. But for just like a daily, efficient, affordable, nice car, I don't think there's anything higher on my list than the Elantra Hybrid right now.
How much does this cost too in this trim that you have?
So this one starts at 24, the hybrid does, and then the limited model is 29. And Hyundai and Kia do a really good job of not like packaging in too many crazy options, or everything is standard depending on the trim you get. So this one only costs $30,715 with the white paint, and that's it. So you're paying $30,000 for a 500-mile car with a nice interior. Nice wheels, a good design. Like I said, I don't think there's a lot of cars that I would choose over this one.
I remember when we were deciding between this and the Civic and the Taos were the other two competitors in the value class in 2021. And I remember when we were deciding between those three cars, they all kind of offered the same amount of performance, the same, you know, basic features, the same, you know, like just kind of like basic goodness and passenger hauling and stuff like that. And they were all about the same price. And then this one got 50 miles per gallon while the other two were, you know, between 30 and 40. And so it was just kind of a runaway. Like for someone needing a value oriented car, there's just really, I mean, it's almost unparalleled. It's just a great, great all around package for, you know, basic transportation.
We tend to forget, but you know, like again, and that's a really interesting grouping too, where you've got a small SUV and two small sedans, right? All kind of aimed, even if it's not their primary thing, they need to be sort of aimed at efficiency in addition to having aggressive pricing, right? But man, you're right. For $24,000 to $30,000 to get like a vehicle that's got some nice equipment. I think that generally speaking, we can say that we've been fans of the packaging that Hyundai has been doing really for years. I like the way that they sell their cars, where you get a lot of stuff. You know, they're kind of tiers of options as opposed to more bespoke stuff that makes it pretty simple for buyers. And then that kind of fuel economy in a car that's, you know, presumably not, I'm sure it's not the most luxurious riding experience ever, but probably pretty quiet and pretty comfortable and really easy to drive. So for just normal people who want a car and are willing to not have an SUV in 2023, this feels like a hell of a bargain, right?
It's one of those things where a lot of people say this, where they're like, oh, I'm going to buy a car and own it forever, which is never true, right? But if you're just a person who needs a car and is not like an enthusiast or something, and you just want a nice new car, mm-hmm. I can imagine buying this thing and owning it for 20 years, you know, depending on how much you drive. Like it's one of those cars that if you're not, you know, again, it's not the sportiest car in the world, but if you just need a good solid car, you could theoretically buy one of these and just own it for a very long time and be super happy with it. I think the Civic, when we did Star Wars, the main thing with the Civic was that it was nicer to drive. It was a little bit sportier. And I think it was a little bit better balanced. But again, in this class, it doesn't really matter. And then in terms of comfort, the ride is awesome. The suspension is great. I have no issues with it feeling too unsettled or anything. It's a little loud. I think that's just kind of what you get in this segment. Mm-hmm. You get a little bit of road noise. And then the transition between gas and hybrid can be a little bit harsh. You do hear that like roaring when the gas engine kicks in at higher speeds. Mm-hmm. So, but that's it. Those are really my only two complaints. And I don't think that's necessarily even exclusive to the Elantra. I think that's what you're going to get in this class either way with any car.
$24,000. You're not going to get a ton of powertrain refinement at $24,000, yeah. Right? Sorry to cut you off, Brett, but
no, that was it.
And to, you know, to speak to like the comfort level, this thing has you'll see it right here. Massive amount of leg room back there. Like you can see behind the driver's seat. I know Jeff is at least 6 feet tall and there's still so much leg room in mm-hmm. that rear seat.
When I sat back there today, it was like, I was actually surprised because I haven't sat back there in a long time, but I was surprised how much leg room and headroom there was.
That's like at 6 feet. Oddly long cabin. Like the space between the front row and the back row is just oddly like very, very well proportioned for backseat passengers.
Yeah, I would imagine that maybe there's a little bit of compromise in terms of trunk space, but it is pretty amazing what sort of like cabin packaging automakers are able to do today. Really across the board, I would say this isn't like something that's specific to Hyundai, but you're right. Like having a very usable back seat, as we'll talk about a lot kind of at the end of the show when I'm talking about putting kids in cars, is always something that I really appreciate as a tall person and as a parent, right? But yeah. I think everybody, everything else being equal, would rather have a little bit more space when they have to put people in the backseat of their car than not, even if they don't do that all the time. Really quickly, just to answer the question that super producer Kyle posed, I think he's asking about the interior. Is that colorway light blue or is it just the camera?
It's just the camera. It's like a beige, yeah. Like a light beige.
Okay.
It's one of the two no cost colors you can get besides black.
And the exterior is like is it a pearl white or a metallic or?
It's like a pearl white. It's really nice. I don't know if I'd pay $450 for it. Let me see. I was looking
at the configuration. Yeah, but if it's on the lot, you wanted a white car and you're in Florida, right, or LA or someplace where the sun is really hot, you know, white cars are a little bit more desirable, I guess. But
like $4 a month on a lease or on a finance payment too.
Right.
Yeah, for sure. And I was going to say, for trunk space, it's 14.2 cubic feet, which is only two less than the Civic. So, mm-hmm. I mean, the compromise is virtually nothing.
Not two cubes. Oh. 0.2.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's negligible.
Bigger than the Corolla Hybrid. I just looked up what my Corolla Hybrid a few weeks ago was, and it's 13.6 or something like that. So,
yeah.
Not bad. Big, decent car for a family.
Yeah. The biggest downside here for me is aesthetic. I know that you guys like this design. I like it a little bit better when it's dressed up in end guys and it's a little lower with the bigger wheel on it. I just think in white with a slightly smaller wheel, it looks pretty bad. Talking about like a car that you could own for 20 years. Like Hyundai reliability is like come way up. All those scores have come way up. So this is not a statement about like how it'll last. Sure. I don't think that I would be happy to look at this car for 20 years at all. I like it.
I think the Civic is fine. The Civic is so anonymous and inoffensive. Like, I think it's going to appeal to more people. You're right. But I don't know. It's cool. You can have a little fun with your small cars.
It's not fun to me either. I think it's just awkward. The proportions are awkward. Like, in some angles, we're seeing it now. Like, the weird sort of rakish... I don't even know what you call it, the V created by the integrated spoiler almost to the rear deck and the bottom of the bumper. That's cool. Like, the detailing is cool. I like the little way that the three lines come together and the character lines on the side. But is piece by piece, I think they look nice. But together as a whole, it just looks a little, I don't know, mashed up to me. So
Definitely like the facelift better. That hasn't been confirmed for the US yet, but the global facelift that I'm sure we're going to get eventually. Okay. Excuse me. I definitely think that's a little bit more, it's not like toned down. It's still very bold, but it's a little more like aesthetically appealing instead of just being weird. Mm-hmm. But I agree with Jeff. I think it's really nice to have this much, you know, this much weirdness, this much playfulness in a commodity car. You usually have to kind of step up to more expensive vehicles to get this much, you know, character. Whether it's good or bad, you know, is up to you. But I just like that it's offered at a lower price point.
I appreciate the risk taking for sure. And this is just one that doesn't pay off for me, right? But that's what happens, right? So
yeah.
I like that they're not all just cookie cutters, you know, in a place where we were sort of 30 years ago, where it really was kind of paint by numbers design. Even though that those might be designs that we all love now. They were very similar to one another at the time. So cool. It's not that often that we get to talk about something. I feel like just the general scope of the industry plus the cars that are usually available for us to drive, it's rare that we get something that actually, like, you know, scratches that under 30 cost. So that's a fun one. Why don't we shift to Brett? Well, let's talk about something that's well over $30,000. You had an exciting first drive on Motor One and Inside EVs this week. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. We got a chance to go get a very brief. It was probably about a 30-minute drive in total behind the wheel of the Lucid Air Sapphire, which is officially the most powerful four-door sedan, the most powerful production four-door sedan in history. Mm-hmm. Most powerful four-door in the world right now. Just absolutely mental driving experience. It's got a tri-motor electric powertrain, single motor up front, and two motors on the rear, with each one sending power to the, you know, to one rear wheel. And that gives it like genuine torque vectoring instead of kind of like brake-based traction control or torque vectoring, which is really cool. That's really nice to see. And it was just like insane. The least powerful mode limits the car to something like 760 horsepower for like the gentle drive mode is 760.
Yeah, there's like smooth and swift or right. Yep.
So smooth and swift both get 760 horsepower, and then
still more than a Hellcat.
Right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And then step up to Sapphire and you get something like 1100. And then if you go into launch control within Sapphire mode, you get the full 1234 horsepower. So it was crazy. I mean, you were talking earlier, Seth, about, you know, getting a little bit jaded in this industry. You know, like, there's always something cool around the corner. You're never like whenever we have cars like Hyundai Elantra hybrids that are fine, we like get through it for a week and we enjoy it, but there's always something cool on the horizon waiting for us. Mm-hmm. This was one of those that just like shifted the paradigm for how fast cars are, like how fast cars can be. We did one launch control from a dead stop, and like this like guttural like ghost noise came out of my body that I didn't like. It was completely involuntary, just this insane like oh no kind of sound, like just nuts, absolutely nuts. We did a video on it and you can kind of see the second launch that we did, I was able to actually like enjoy it and not be surprised and terrified by it. And so you can kind of see in the video that we did just how fun it is. But yeah, it's just like insane. It was a really, really cool car. They did a wonderful job integrating all the like performance systems and maintaining some decent ride comfort in spite of the fact that it's a lot stiffer and a lot more, the ride is a little bit stiffer, and then the car itself is a lot more rigid than before. And it still is a great luxury sedan in that smooth mode, if that's what you want it to be. So totally nuts.
Wow. It's also, so first of all, Jonathan Brown said that's a nice sedan, although I hit my head getting in the rear seat with the roof, that roof line. And yeah. I just want to echo that. That echoes a sentiment that our recently departed editor, Brandon Turkus, used to say all the time. I think he generally liked the Air quite a lot, but he had big issues with it because the ingress and egress in his mind were really difficult. It's just a low roof line. I don't remember ever having that issue, but maybe I'm so tall that I'm always stooping my head more than kind of the average person or something. I'm not sure, but.
And it definitely like that is kind of this car's one big drawback, I think, compared to a traditional luxury sedan, like a Mercedes S-Class or an AMG version, is it is just a little bit smaller inside. The packaging otherwise is really great. You still get a huge front trunk. The rear trunk is big and it's got like a little like deep well behind the rear bumper. Mm-hmm. And so there's tons of space for storage and, you know, decent space once you're fully on board. But it is a little bit chop top kind of energy for sure. And I agree with Jonathan on that second point that it looks nice in photos. It looks great in person. It's such an imposing, attractive car when you're actually up close and in person with it.
That blue is really good. They had it last year in Monterey. That blue is so good. Last year when we did Star Awards, we had, was it the GT Performance model?
Grand Touring, yeah.
It was Grand Touring Performance. Oh, okay. So when we took it on the track, I think our one complaint that we had was the suspension, that it was still too soft, because the performance or the straight line performance was absurd, right, even in that car. So how much does this improve the suspension compared to that model we drove last year?
I think it kind of strikes that like sports sedan balance that you want, where you feel the bumps a little bit for sure. You know, it's not like, I wouldn't go so far as to say it's choppy or rough, but you definitely feel it. And there's a really great amount of initial, it feels like there's like a good thick like bushing in there, kind of like absorbing some of the nasty vibrations and stuff like that, which I like. That's like a perfect sports sedan balance for me, where it's firm but it's not harsh or like rattly. I think it kind of nails that. It does have adaptive dampers. If you are in smooth mode, it's a little bit, you know, it's not like flabby at all, but it's definitely a little bit smoother and not quite as what's the word? Just a little bit toned down. But still it's not going to be in the level of like a Mercedes S-Class in the ride comfort space, but it's also not meant to be. It's just a really, it kind of nails that sports sedan balance that I really like.
Yeah, you don't really expect it to be putting the Lucid on the track for our performance testing was super interesting, right? And with this car, I'm sure it would be, you know, even more impressive, but not still feel light, right? Because it's not a lightweight car. Like it kind of doesn't matter the amount of power that you have. Like it matters for the time that it takes to get around the track, of course, but the feeling of changing direction in the car is always going to be a little bit awkward when you've got this much weight down low. And I mean, you know, relative to some of the new stuff we're seeing and like the bigger batteries out there, I think this has still got the 118 kilowatt hour battery pack or something. So it's a big pack. Yeah. I don't know exactly the weight on it, but I know that it's reasonably efficient. So it's probably smaller at that capacity than some of the competitors would be. But still, it's a lot of weight down low. But
I would love to drive it on a track, you know, and quite frankly, 30 minutes was only enough to get a little teaser taste of how it's going to be. I really would love to see what it's like on a track. I mean, the one thing I will say, though, is like it's lower to the ground. The suspension is firmer and everything's tuned to be a little bit more aggressive. And so I think that it's not going to have as much of that like transitional challenges that the one that we drove around last year, the Grand Touring, was. I think this is going to be genuinely like an actually decent, you know, sporty sedan. And the other cool thing is, so within Sapphire, you've got a few different drive modes that you can select from, depending on how you want to be driving it. There's like a drag strip mode, which gives you all the power, like maximum draw on the battery, everything like that for the span of a quarter mile. And mm-hmm. then there's one that's called one lap. And that means you're going to be going out, you're going to be setting like a qualifying lap, and you want the maximum performance possible over that span of a lap. But then it also has a circuit mode, which is kind of like, you're going to be out on a track for several laps and you want to have consistent performance, and the car will dial itself back a little bit, but it'll make sure that it performs consistently lap after lap after lap, which I think is really cool. Like a very thoughtful, you know, some of the fast EVs out there are only fast for one or two launches and then performance falls off pretty significantly. Mm-hmm. And Lucid is taking that into account and recognizing that, you know, people probably aren't going to track this car, but there are going to be people who want to go out on Angeles Crest for 3 or 4 hours on a Saturday morning, and they're going to want, you know, really good, consistent performance. And I like that they've gone to that level of planning with this car.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess the other thing to point out, cause we haven't talked about it yet, is that it's good that it's the Sapphire version of this car is so complete, because it's, what is it? $180,000?
$250,000.
Oh, wow. Okay.
$250,000.
Yeah. So tying that in, Jonathan Brown just made the point. Many of my friends are interested in the Lucid, yet they are afraid of owning a vehicle from a new company that may or may not be here in the near future. Probably better to lease, and the leases are great. It's sort of hard to speculate. Like, we've seen this week, I think, news about Lucid's earnings. They had I believe there was the Q3 earnings call, did not go exactly as planned. They've actually gained quite a lot in terms of the amount of money they're making, or rather not losing, per vehicle, according to some reporting that we've seen. But they're really upside down right now, so it's costing them much more to produce each one of these vehicles than they're getting for selling it, right? So I like to think that that's, you know, like a short-term problem. It's a big one, I'm sure, but if you have enough runway, you can get to the point, the place where you're profitable, as you start to scale up and people really like it. The thing that I trust about Lucid, and again, this is not financial advice. Like, I have no idea really, like how much runway they have, but I know that the technology is there. Right. And I know that Lucid is invested really heavily in, the kind of building blocks of EVs, of doing everything themselves, building everything that they can in-house, kind of owning their own technology and trying to make it class leading in every way, right? So I think that there's the ability for Lucid to go down market and make a lot more or be a lot more profitable per model when they're able to do that. But getting there is going to be really challenging, as it was for Tesla. You know, we sort of saw this, we've seen this movie before, and for other automakers. But
that's kind of the crux of it for me, is because I just think that every Lucid I've ever been in, or, you know, in spite of the fact that it's a brand new automaker, it feels like a much more complete car than if you go back and sit in the first generation Tesla. They're fine. They made EVs attractive to like a completely different set of buyers, and that's a really great thing. But this first generation Lucid just feels pretty much done. Like, it doesn't really... Yeah. Want for a lot of refinement or want for a lot of like fine tuning. It kind of just works really well. And so I really hope that they can make it through kind of this initial market penetration, so that they can continue building great cars and continue refining this like already very good formula.
Yeah. So
we didn't even mention the range, right? It has 420 miles, Brett.
Yeah, even being a high performance EV, this one will do 427 miles
crazy
for the EPA, which is insane. I mean, again, this is like a this is a first generation product that has pole vaulted over the entire, all of its competitors in one fell swoop. You know, the maximum you can get a Lucid to go is 516 miles. Insane. That's just an insane amount of range for an EV, especially one that doesn't have a 200 kilowatt hour battery. It's a very approachably sized battery.
We should do a Lucid Air Hyundai Elantra hybrid range test.
Yeah, clearly.
Well, I know Camisa did a drag race with the Sapphire, a Plaid, and a Bugatti, right? Like, so, like, which I don't want to be make a spoiler for anybody, but make a spoiler. Am I 78 years old? But the Sapphire wins, right? Like, it is far and away the quickest car. Let's go back. I know it's a little bit of a detour from where we're at right now, but friend of the podcast, John Hartman, asks or says, Toyota needs an electric SUV and the FJ seems like the platform for it. Any chance that's coming? So both of you guys have been on with Toyota more this year over the last year than I have. You, Brett, most recently too. I'm sure some conversations came up on the launch of the Land Cruiser. We saw the new Land Cruiser. I'm sure somebody asked some questions about electrification. And we also know that Toyota and the Japanese in general have really been lagging behind in terms of full electrification. Was there any conversation around a full like BEV SUV?
Quite frankly, no. They were very like kind of the standard party line of choosing not to comment on future product, sure, which is totally understandable. But what Toyota really likes to hammer home is that, and this is pure marketing speak, I'm not applying any editorial spin on it at all, that hybrids are a good solution for people to like reduce their carbon emissions right now. And I can't disagree. Like this Land Cruiser is going to be electrified with a 2.4 liter turbo hybrid. And you know, like it's going to be able to do some EV range just around, you know, like around your neighborhood and stuff like that. It'll be able to do purely electric driving. So they didn't comment specifically on an electric SUV. You know, we have seen a few, you know, little teasers or Easter eggs or whatever you want to call them in other Land Cruiser marketing materials that suggest that maybe something like an FJ Cruiser is coming back. And, you know, whether that's going to be electrified or purely electric is honestly anyone's guess.
Well, yeah. The BZ4X does exist.
Right.
Although that's probably not the one you want to buy if you're looking for an electric SUV. But I think Toyota does, like we've said, Toyota does lag behind a little bit on the EV space, and which is so strange to me because they have great products that I think would translate well to EVs, like the new Land Cruiser. I think would be an awesome EV, or even a smaller version of that, the RAV4. The RAV4 Prime is like excellent. So I don't know. I think they just need to catch up a little bit, but an off-road sort of focused EV would be really cool.
Yeah, and we've already seen like whether or not like we can debate the merits of Toyota's hybrid strategy versus like kind of going full in on electrification on a lot of different levels. And I think that there are pluses and minuses to all of those arguments. But we know that there's a market, right? Like we've seen Rivian is having success in the electrified SUV space and off-roading space, more specifically. You know, GM has chosen to go to market with their Ultium stuff with Hummer, like the launching the Hummer brand, or a sub brand, I guess, under GMC with a fully electrified thing. We just saw the Cadillac Escalade IQ. So we know that they're going there too. So, what am I missing? You know, Lucid is coming out with an SUV, as well. Lotus has just launched an EV, SUV, more of a car-like SUV, not an off-roady thing, but we know that electrified off-road SUV is already an idiom, right? It exists in the universe. So I do think that there's money to be made for people who are going to be playing there too. And just to echo Kyle's point, and thank you for the promo. We can talk about it later too. But for those of you who are interested in topics like those, we are going to be back on the air with the Inside EVs podcast tomorrow morning at 9:30 a.m. Eastern time. So I'm really excited. We've got a whole new slate of hosts for that show after some changeover. I'm going to be on it temporarily just to help. And we're going to be talking about a lot of things, including Brett's going to be back to talk about the Sapphire for that audience too. So it should be a ton of fun. So join John and whoever else is on who wants to see it. Join us tomorrow at 9:30 and we'll talk all EV all the time. Cool. All right. That was a fun digression. Why don't I talk about the Tonale that I just got out of, just gave the keys up for today, because it was actually really interesting. That I not the last time I was on the show, but a couple of weeks ago I had the Dodge Hornet, right? So Dodge's version of this platform with, in that case, it was the straight gasoline engine, the 2.0T four cylinder, and a much lower price point. With the Tonale, I'm looking at the Monroney here, this one as it sits, which is the Veloce trim and in what they call the E all-wheel drive. So this is a plug-in hybrid version of the car. It starts at a little over $47,000, and the one that I have is $57,400. So already we're about more than $25,000 more than the ICE powered Dodge was. And for that, you get a lot of things, right? So starting with the powertrain, you're looking at the power port here. It does have a decent size. It's got a 15.5 kilowatt hour battery pack. It says it's rated for 30 miles of range on that. I actually did a full charge on it just because I had it sitting on the charger while I was working the other day. And it was showing 31 miles of range, as I was driving around too. So I wasn't able to do a full range test on it, but at least in the very initial offering, it seems like that's reasonable. So that's 30 miles is better, in terms of PHEV, 30 miles of range, if it's legit, or even if that gets cut in half in the wintertime in Michigan or something like that, if you have a short commute, still could mean that you're able to primarily rely on electric power as opposed to using a lot of gasoline, or at the minimum be very, very efficient in doing it. So I think that's cool. And then I went back to read our coverage of the debut of this car and really thought that we were spot on when we did the first drive, and that when it's all juiced up, when you have plenty of power, this thing has got, 285 horsepower, total system horsepower. So it's, the output is really strong. The electric torque, when you do have that battery, is amazing. So the acceleration from 10 to 30 or 40 miles per hour is really, really good. Makes it feel more like a proper Alfa Romeo. When you're driving kind of the normal modes and sort of putting around town, you could be confused that you're in just about any small SUV, right? It doesn't feel particularly special. The gas engine here is a 1.3 liter turbo four cylinder. So it's not an engine that's got a lot of character, just kind of out of the box, right? You have to work pretty hard to make it sound all right and things like that. But overall, I think that there are kind of enough sporty touches, really cool, huge paddle shifters, a nice steering wheel, the perfect, probably the world's most perfect wheel design of all time in the Alfa telephone dial style alloys on this. I think that there's a lot to like about it. It's a little hard for me to justify it at 50, 50-ish or higher $1,000 when it's only kind of, marginally better than its Dodge platform mate, which is a lot cheaper. And even then, you guys know, how many times do we, basically every time we do this show, we're talking about a new small crossover SUV thing, right? The competition here is huge. So I don't know that it's really moving the needle, even though I do believe that it's an enjoyable driving experience. So
Alphas in general, it feels like they're always the third, fourth, fifth luxury option, right? If you're shopping around, it's like, okay, you're going to hit BMW, you're going to hit Mercedes, you're going to hit Audi, and then, oh, maybe Alfa Romeo, after Lexus or something. And I don't think the Tonale really does anything to change that. I think it's an interesting SUV. And like you said, the plug-in hybrid makes it pretty appealing, but over the Dodge, I just don't really understand the appeal of this in that segment.
Well, and you're right that it is kind of an oddball choice. Alfa Romeo, any Alfa Romeo, a Stelvio is a little bit more oddball than an X3 or a GLC, but you also get some genuine character to go along with making that choice. It is kind of just a little bit more dynamic. The exhaust is a little more sassy, even if you get the 2 liter, just a little more exciting overall. And this one doesn't quite have that for me. It kind of just, it's sporty and enjoyable enough, but it doesn't quite feel as interesting as compared to its rivals. It just feels like yet another compact premium SUV. The worst part for me, like the thing that really just kind of kills it, is like the interior treatment vaguely looks Alfa Romeo-ish, but like the seats especially are great. They look straight out of like a larger Alfa Romeo for sure. But the infotainment is just that tablet on top of the screen, on top of the dash. It runs the same, you know, Dodge Uconnect software. It just doesn't feel as diversified to me as like the Stelvio has like that weird, it's not a great infotainment, but it's unique to Alfa Romeo and it's integrated with the dash really well. And it just like, this just doesn't totally do it for me as an Alfa.
Yeah, it's so interestingly, this weekend I was at a kid's birthday party and I was talking to a friend who's not a car guy really at all, but for whatever reason, we started talking about, he brought up Alfa Romeo. We were talking about Italy and he brought up Alfa Romeo and saying, again, as not a car guy, it's a brand that he's always really liked. For whatever reason, he thinks of Alfa as being like one of the coolest brands and was really interested in their products. He didn't notice, like he walked past this car in the driveway when he came into the house that we were in, and he didn't notice that there was an Alfa there. Now, part of the reason is, like, I was laughing. I actually think this is a really good looking design. Like I said, I like the wheels. I think that it's not revolutionary. There are a lot of cool looking sort of coupe like SUVs out there these days. But in this kind of rental car gray with, you know, like nothing super distinguishing, if it were in a deep red or like Alfa's green is amazing, you know, any of the chromatic colors or, you know, like brighter tones from Alfa, I think would make set this apart. And in fact, I said this that when we talked about the Hornet as well, I got questions like crazy about the Hornet, but it was in that signature yellow orange color that they have that I keep forgetting. It's named after a city in Mexico. And partially, I think because of that, people find it really interesting. And sometimes you forget, like even just that, if this Alfa were in red, I bet I would have had at least one more conversation about it than in the totally fine, but very average gray paint that they delivered it in. So
I think the design is actually okay. And I even like the Hornet, like the shape of both of those SUVs is pretty good. But I think I talked about this when we were talking Hornet is like, they're way too similar. Right. And I know like there are so many SUVs and cars out there that share, you know, platforms and body styles, whatever, but a Dodge and an Alfa looking almost identical is weird to me.
Yeah, agreed. It's a little too close for comfort, and it's probably a better deal overall for what Dodge is getting than for what Alfa is getting here, unfortunately. I think that this car, especially in the base trim, which by the way, I think it starts at around $44,000, so the even the base version of the hybrid is not that expensive, like not crazy. You can get it loaded up. But it makes more of a case for itself when it's a nicer brand and you know, some of the slightly nicer detailing, a little bit more interesting, but at a lot lower price point than one of the ones that's completely loaded up. Unless you really absolutely can make the case for driving a plug-in, right? If that really fits with your lifestyle, then maybe you there's some sort of help there overall. But interesting vehicle. I don't think that it's one that's, like I said, I don't think it's moving the needle right now, despite the fact that it's pretty good almost all the way around. So couple of comments here. We got a lot from Jonathan Brown. Basically, I think he was agreeing with you, Jeff, saying that he loves the passion that Alfa instills in their vehicles, but pricing even loaded is too high. My bride would never do a Dodge brand, even at one third. I don't know what Ardless is, Roadless is, but Stellantis is in the cards for me. And I think that's fair. They've suffered some from branding problems, and obviously the Italian brands, lots of people love them, love their sports cars and things like that. They've had a tougher time making a go of it with commodity cars here in the US. And then Naveen is saying the Tonale is far more exciting than the NX 450H. It has more character, where the NX has character of just being a fancy RAV4. I don't know how to respond to that.
I love the NX. That's great.
I don't have anything against the NX. I think the Tonale is maybe a little more interesting to drive, but
I think NX is probably a better all-arounder. I don't know. It's not the most exciting SUV I've driven, but
I think the Tonale outdoes it in range, which is kind of cool.
Okay.
You know, yeah. Like, you know, being a plug-in Toyota, you would think Toyota products, you think it'd be best in the industry. But I think the Tonale actually outdoes it in range. But I don't think it has more power. I think it has less power than the NX. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah. Interesting comparison anyways, but yeah, one is a little bit, I don't find the NX particularly sexy, but as a rational comparison, I think we'd have to have both of them in front of us and compare stats and driving characters. But all right, speaking of driving character, sort of saving the most exciting for last year. I know that we talked a lot about GR Corolla when the car launched and we were first driving it. Brett, you've been screwing around in one all week, or at least for the last couple of days, and enjoying it. And super producer Kyle has also been enjoying it quite a lot too. Let's talk about which one you have to start, because I don't know.
It's a really, really, really ridiculous one. I've got a Marizo edition in my garage, in my driveway right now, and it is very, very cool.
Yeah,
it's very silly. We went for dinner on Monday night. And obviously we took the car, you know, they just dropped it off that morning. So we went for a spin, and it's just bonkers how stiff and firm and like kind of, you know, definitely like on the harsher side that this Marizo edition is. It's got like stiffer suspension, rear seat delete kit. In place of the rear seat is a huge crossbody brace that like bolts to the floor in a couple different locations. So you definitely, I haven't driven a circuit or a core edition, but I can say that this feels like a very stiff, like robust platform, at least. Mm-hmm. You know, everything is very immediate. All of your inputs are very immediate, which is a nice thing for a performance car. So yeah, it's been an absolute ball. I'm really excited. Kyle and I are going to take it for a more protracted spin tomorrow and actually have some fun with it. Besides just going around town, and it's going to be a good time.
I'm going to put you on the spot immediately.
Lay it on me.
GR Corolla, Marizo, or Civic Type R?
So this is the argument I keep having. So I wouldn't get a Marizo. In spite of the fact that it's sold out, like even if you could get one, I wouldn't get the Marizo. It's too stiff. Like it's just, it wouldn't do for me. I would do like a loaded core with like the, you know, performance dampers and limited slip and everything like that. I would do the core optioned up a little bit, and you get it's like 39.8 fully loaded for the core model versus 45 for a Civic Type R. Civic Type R is lighter. It's got more cargo space, a little bit more passenger room, but it's also front drive only. So I don't know. Like and it's $5,000 more expensive. And you can't get heated seats or like some of the luxury features on the Type R, which I thought was surprising that the GR Corolla had a few more like luxury features.
Yeah, it's tough because I've driven all three, the core and the base and the Marizo for the GR Corolla. Initially when I drove the core and the circuit are the two below. Yeah. I drove them on the track. They're fine. They're sporty. They're fun. Like they didn't immediately blow me away. But then you get in the Marizo and it has, you know, the cheat code tires. It has the rear seat delete, has some other fun stuff that makes it just so much more like it feels very, very, very close to Type R in terms of just outright performance. It's not a great daily, I don't think. It's super stiff, like you said. The interior is pretty like, you know, there's not a lot going on. So but man, I love this GR Corolla Marizo. In terms of just a pure like driver's car, I thought it was awesome.
How's the shifter on the manual car?
It's not bad. It's not Type R good, but it's definitely like Toyota has a reputation for building kind of like ropey, rubbery manual transmissions. Right. Yeah. Not the case here at all. It's like solidly above average. Definitely like a better transmission than they've built in a long time, you know, in some of their like commodity cars. So yeah, it's solid. I was really impressed. I kind of was expecting that to be like the weak point, and it just simply isn't the case.
Yeah, because I haven't been in, you guys have been in both. I haven't been in the new Type R or the GR Corolla yet. Excited to get some time in both, probably coming up. But that was always the thing, like historically, that would put Honda over the, you know, the competition at the time was a really sublime shifter for a car that you want to have a manual transmission. And usually really good, very tactile steering, right? Yes. Like good feedback and you know, lightweight, but nice to use steering. So if Corolla is getting close to GR Corolla is getting close to Type R there, then it really does become a much more difficult decision.
Yeah.
We got a little reel going on here.
Yeah. I think that's kind of where this one's gonna like differentiate itself, is it's finally like a solid hot hatch Toyota product with good steering and a good transmission. Kind of coming for the Civic Shock a little bit, which is always fun.
Yeah. Well, and the other thing is, I guess my point about the manuals is that it's getting rarer and rarer, even with performance cars, that it would be, you know, available maybe, but easy to buy for sure. You know, there are just fewer and fewer of them being offered and being sold. As we hear, that's pretty inspiring, actually. A cool little exhaust note from that car. But so having a car that has a great transmission, I think, is more of a difference maker now than it has been, right?
Yeah, so for sure.
It's good that they're hitting that out of the park.
Yep. This exhaust note is like a little, it's not bad. It's a little blatty and kind of like, you know. But we were filming this one yesterday, and I had my dog in the front yard with us, and she was like cowering every time I revved the engine, because like the drone from the exhaust was just so like, she did not like it at all. Like,
It has those really cool triple exhaust tips too. It has the one in the middle,
which makes sense in a three cylinder car. It's a little silly on the Type R, but it makes perfect sense on this car that actually has three cylinders.
Yeah, it does. It looks cool, and they are, maybe it's them thumbing their nose a little bit, but.
Yeah.
Oh man, sweet. Well, so I haven't, again, to reiterate, like, Toyota, if you're listening, I have not yet driven a GR Corolla, and had I driven a GR Corolla, there's a chance that it might be on the list that we're about to talk about now, the best quote unquote supercars for dads, because it's a fast, fun handling, great to drive car that has four seats that presumably you could put car seats in. I mean, again, like, you guys, maybe you would veto it immediately for putting a car seat in the back and driving at the same time. Maybe it's too small, but in any case,
let me just interrupt you real quick, because even though this is a two seater, the Murizo edition's a two seater.
Oh, right. Sorry.
It has a top tether on the rear, like, strut bar. So like you can put your child seat in there and then run like your top tether all the way back to the rear strut bar and bolt it in like as appropriate in the front seat. So
in the front seat, right.
Yeah.
Okay. So knowing the number of seats is critical too. That's job number one for me. Fail, big fail.
Well, no, you could get we'll have them send you a circuit or a core and you'll be able to redeem yourself. You can have a four seater.
Absolutely. Maybe just all three in sequence so that I can really tell the difference, but all right, so let's talk about, I've got as discussed last week and already today, I wanted to put together a list of what I'm calling the best supercars for dads, right? So like we were just saying, what I mean here is a car that's got sort of exceptional performance and the ability to have your kids in the back, right? I have a two-year-old Finney and I have a four-year-old Jack. They're both about to be forward facing a lot of the times, at least in the cars that I have, but like the little one kind of has to go back and forth between the two. But the point is, you need to have a car that you can put kids in to actually enjoy it, right? So the other thing that I think is important here too in this conversation is, a lot of people who can afford any of the cars that we're going to talk about might be able to afford a true quote unquote supercar, something from Ferrari or McLaren or something like that, and have it in the garage. And maybe they do. They might just like performance cars and have a high performance SUV and their kind of supercar as well. But my experience now is somebody who's got multiple cars that I can choose from often is that when I don't have a car that I can put my kids in, I'm going to choose that a lot less, right? So even if you do have the Aston Martin sitting in the garage, if you can't put the kids in it, you are not going to drive it that often, right? So I think that's, in terms of like value per like hours driven, hours enjoyed, having a backseat becomes really critically important when you have kids and you're doing stuff with the kids too. All right. So the only other constraint that I'm going to say here is, I did not open this up to the entire world of automobiles, everything that exists, frankly, just because I didn't have a ton of time and I don't know that would be that exciting anyways. So these are all cars that I've driven
basically over the last year, I think there's one on there that was more like 2 years ago, but I've been in and have really enjoyed and had the experience of driving them with my kids too. So, it also occurs to me, maybe I should also have it on as an honorable mention. I did not put any of the Lucid Airs that I've been in on this list. And I was sort of thinking through as we were talking about it, Brett, I'm not really sure why. I think that was just a miss, because that does suit the Brief pretty well. Fast, fun to drive. Maybe not quite as good on like on a river road or something like that, but I still think that I would really enjoy it. So I'll cop to that one already, to any of the Lucid fans watching. All right, Kyle. So let's start with our honorable mention. This is a list of five. It's really a list of six because I wanted to throw the honorable mention on here. So honorable mention is going to go to the Ford Bronco Raptor, which is the only reason it's not fully making the list is because even in this sort of squishy definition that I'm making of a supercar, I don't quite think it gets there. I think it, you know, if we're talking about the Raptor R, the F-150 Raptor R, that one's super fast and it feels like an incredibly special experience when you're accelerating or doing something like that. The Bronco Raptor is close. It is pretty impressive that it can go at a high rate of speed just about anywhere you want it to go. And it's super fun to drive and it'll absolutely impress your kids that you can definitely fit in the back. The reason maybe it doesn't crack the top five overall is just that lack of punch relative to the competition. And I'll also point out something that was shown to me and bugged me the last time I had a loan of a Bronco, a big Bronco in general, was there are no vents to the rear. So if it's really cold or really hot where you are and you're putting kids, especially in car seats in the back, especially if it's really hot, you know, we've been dealing with all these 100-degree days. You're going to have to keep the car running for a really long time to get the air conditioning back there, or in the winter, bundle them up in the car because they'll expect them to be cold. So as a dad, you want your kids to be at a perfect temperature and not too hot or too cold for your own sanity and for theirs. So close, but no cigar for the Raptor.
I mean, you just saw it with the doors and the roof off, Seth. I don't know what you're complaining about. That is the epitome of like 470 air conditioning. Four doors off, 70 miles an hour.
Yeah, until the 2-year-old decides that he doesn't want to look at the sky, which happens all the time, and you can't just push a button to shut a roof, then you're in trouble. But point well taken. So, all right. So let's start with the list for real. All right. Number five, actually, Kyle, I need you. Oh, here it is. Okay. Number five is a car that I was just recently in, although it doesn't have to be this version of it, is the M3 Competition xDrive, right? So four-door car, proper four-door car, just enough space for you know, all of this. Great exhaust note, amazing seats. Tremendous performance. You know, I mean, it's got a ton of horsepower. It's got good straight line speed and all of that, 3-ish seconds to 60. But an incredibly capable handling car too around a track. I think it's phenomenal. Any argument here? It's a pretty good all around like daily driver, right?
Sure.
Yeah. Kind of like nails the Brief. I like the M3 better than the M5 just because it's a little smaller, a little more nimble. Solid choice.
I'd go M5, but that's just me.
Yeah. Well, maybe if I did the back-to-back, the M5 would be the way to go. You would be talking about a little bit more space in back. So there's that. But again, M3, pretty iconic. I would say a little bit more iconic even than M5. Great dad car. Save yourself a little money. Keep that for a watch.
your kids are spoiled if they're turning up their noses at a Bronco Raptor and an M3 instead of an M5.
Well, I mean, I have heard this. I'm pretty early in the experience right now, but I have heard that the kids of car riders are the most spoiled in terms of cars because they just get to see everything. So TBD, but I imagine that's probably the case. All right. Number four is, and this was honestly like it, all of these top four could have been number one, but number four is the Cadillac CT5V Blackwing. Again, amazing sort of competitor in the same space. you can have it with a 6-speed manual, which is like the primary argument for me, at least, for making it the number one dad car. Just a beautiful, incredible V8 engine, all the power in the entire world stuffed under the hood of that car. Fun to drive, amazing handling, like great suspension, all of that stuff. I think where it falls down in terms of a dad car, really, and where the other ones win is, well, on the dad car side, the other things that we're going to talk about, two of them at least, just have more space, right? So even though I think this is adequate to get me and my kids in it, if I start putting stuff in the trunk, if I start actually needing to do some more like long-term, day-long errands or things like that, it'd start to feel pretty cramped or cramped pretty soon. Plus, and I guess I haven't like exactly vetted this for all of them, but I know that the at least the version of this that I drove had a lot of Alcantara in it too, which I'm sure it's cleanable, but it's going to be a lot of work to keep it clean when you've got crumbs and other crap in it. So, or you can just let your kids not eat in the car, which is something that I also don't recommend.
They're going to get Cheeto fingers all over that Alcantara.
Oh my God. I know. Jonathan Brown, the M3 makes sense for a dad car and transportation of little kids, especially if you need to get them there rapidly. But yeah, the Blackwing, you know, we all drooled over this car at Star Awards last year. One of our very favorites. And I think, fits really well on this list.
The thing that would kill a, CT5 Blackwing for me as a dad car is my child would pick up all sorts of language from me every time.
Yeah. That's the case. That's the case with a lot of these for sure.
We'd have to like take a different car to grandma's house, 'cause I wouldn't want them showing up being like, daddy's car is so fast.
All right. So moving from some really conventional ones, some really, expected ones, maybe a little less expected in a car that also is the longest since I've been in, but, always very impressed with Audi's RS e-tron, right? So this is, and admittedly, I'll say it right off the bat. I have not driven Taycan, right? So maybe Taycan just wins this space overall, right? But RS e-tron, just again, like a phenomenal handling electric car, tons of power. It's got all that acceleration that you get from one of the super powerful EVs, but kind of remarkably practical on the inside too. Like it does feel a little bit more spacious. It feels very airy too. So like maybe even it doesn't measure out as having a ton more room than some of the other cars. It feels that way. Very practical. Like in my life, the kind of limited range for other cars that you could, other EVs that you could get for this money wouldn't matter all that much because I don't need to take it on long trips. But for like, you know, running errands on a Saturday or going on a fun drive on a back road, I think it works really, really well. Plus I will say that my kids and anybody with kids can weigh in here too. My kids really like EVs. They really love that shock and awe factor of accelerating that we of course love a lot too. So, plus I think this one looks cool. It has a little bit more of the supercar vibe from an outward appearance than probably just about anything else on this list.
You haven't driven RS6 Avant, have you?
I have not driven RS6 Avant. No.
Okay. I was going to say, 'cause that seems like a way more obvious choice than this one, but
yeah. Well, I also, you know, again, like having, I really enjoy the RS e-tron is still to this day, one of the best driving, like 360 degree driving experiences from an electric vehicle that I've ever been in. Right. It feels really nimble, which is not something that you get a lot. We're just talking about this with the Lucid. Like some of the super powerful EVs kind of feel like they're hammering the road to their will, but they don't feel like they're as involving. And e-tron always felt remarkably, the RS e-tron always felt remarkably involving to me for an electric car, which was great. Also pricey. You're right, Jonathan.
This was kind of like one point that I really like about the e-tron, Taycan specifically, but I think it also extends to the e-tron, is our old friend Clint Simone used to say this, that like the Taycan is the first EV that's like made him excited about an EV future because it is really fun and nimble. Like it doesn't just, you know, like you said, it actually feels like connected to the road and kind of enjoyable. And I think the e-tron's the same way, just like a really, really great, solid choice.
Yeah. It's also got a little bit of this, like, I don't know if you guys had this experience growing up with your parents or if your parents had cool cars or something, but I think that there'll be something 20 years from now when you look back on the sort of like second generation, really the second serious generation of electric vehicles, and something like an RS e-tron, and say like, was that kind of an icon, even if just within the Audi sphere, like was that kind of an icon of the time, of the technology at the time? Did it sort of point to the greater things that are yet to come, but like in a way that you remember it really fondly, right? I can sort of see that with this car because of the very unique looks and because it being one of the, it is one of the first great handling kind of electric vehicles. I can see it being a car that my kids would look back and be like, oh yeah, we drove one of those and it was great. It's a car that people still think about and talk about a little. So
I think I'm in the minority here of saying that the e-tron, I really don't like the way it looks. I think the Taycan is just such a better looking car.
No, I don't think you're the minority. I think most people would prefer, and I think I prefer the Taycan to the e-tron, but I think the e-tron is more memorable. Like, So, I don't know. Both really good. I do like the way that it looks, though. All right, number two. Now moving fully out of the EV space. True, like blue chip dad supercar here in the Aston Martin DBX 707. Now we're really talking about something. And again, I know, like even without my caveat of not having driven everything in like Porsche's catalog, I think the Aston might still win out here because of the supercar portion of the equation, right? So you've got a true supercar brand, you've got a crazy amount of power, incredibly quick, like tons of acceleration. It has the look and feel from the exterior and from the interior of driving something that's really special. Primarily because it's insanely expensive, so you're getting what you pay for to a certain extent, but it's still good size SUV, right? Like you can actually all the sort of qualifiers that you have to throw on something like a Blackwing or an M3 about, well, can I put the stroller in the back too if we're going to go, you know, to one town over to go to the museum or something like that? Not an issue with this car. Now you might want to make sure that the stroller's wheels don't have mud on it because the trunk liner is so beautifully upholstered, or the cargo hold is so beautifully upholstered that you don't want to get it dirty. But I think this vehicle really blends those things together super well in terms of it feeling like a special ultra high performance vehicle, but also one that is family sized and has the qualifications as a family car.
Yeah, I think that was the problem with e-tron and M3 is that you can't put a ton of stuff back there in those two cars. They're good enough, but like for all the stuff that you probably need, you need a SUV or a wagon, and DBX 707 that's a good one.
Yeah. Yeah, and again, there are other, like, again, like I'm sure that there are top trim Cayennes that fit this brief a little bit. You know, there's Urus, for sure. There are lots of things that are either, again, I haven't been in, or maybe are competitive. You could make the argument for large, super high powerful or high powered, SUVs. But I like the Aston too. I also just think it's a very stylish thing.
The Urus is too much of like a valet Volkswagen for me. I see way too many of them that I just have no interest whatsoever. This would be much more like interesting and offbeat and kind of cool. And it's the F1 safety car, so that's extremely rad too.
Very dad, yeah. There is something very dad-ish about being the F1 safety car. I'm going fast, but I'm being very careful while I'm doing it. We're all paying a lot of attention here, guys.
That's like going to a football game and being a dad and talking about how great the refs are doing. And
exactly. F1 safety cars at halftime? Like, those kids are really sharp.
F1 safety cars are rad. I don't care what you say. F1 safety cars, pace car special editions, they're rad.
Well, and Brett is not actually a dad, at least to the best of my knowledge right now, but I think Brett has maybe the biggest dad vibes of all of us in the Motor One crew. So you know from which you're speaking. All right. And then number one, which I know you
ever said about me.
You guys are going to throw this back in my face. I know, because I'm contradicting a lot of things that I've just said in this one, but I still think it works. Number one dad car. You can really fill in whatever 911 you want here with back seats. But a 911 GTS I had a couple summers ago. I had a really, truly, truly wonderful, memorable road trip with my 3-year-old Jack in it.
to go over and see my dad. So we had a kind of like three generations of boys type thing. We drove this car around, put a ton of miles on it. I've always been a huge Porsche fan and a big fan of the 911. Who isn't, right? So the way that it wins, you know, and it is neither a supercar nor a particularly good family car, as you well know. The reason I think 911 is the champ here is because it's so surprisingly capable at doing both of those things. Like even a sort of mid-tier 911 like the GTS is always way faster from one point to another on a racetrack or on a great road than you expect it to be relative to the specs. It rewards you more than many cars that are even, you know, double the price in some case, with the feedback and the, you know, sort of subtlety of it, the ease in which you're able to drive really quickly. And then on the practicality front, like, you know, it's been said a billion times, but there's just a ton more storage space in a 911 that you would expect. I'm not going to get the big stroller in there for sure. I have no illusions about that. But you have you can travel, like you've got a really usable, especially kind of around town front trunk. There's more storage space in the back too if you need it. And it actually is not that difficult. You've got to do more work. You've got to do research to figure out how to put car seats in the back of the car. But it is doable. And because I think there's such a fanatical following for 911, there are a lot of videos and articles out there explaining exactly the kind of car seats that you need to have. There's a way, I guess, that you can, without permanently altering anything, just remove the bottom seat cushion of the rear seats, which make a lot of other car seats fit. And I think this is super cool. Porsche isn't alone in this, but Porsche does offer and has for many generations dedicated car seats just for your 911, which is, you know, I mean, I'm sure they're $2,000 or something insane, but it's very cool that they do that too. It's sort of a tip of the cap to this whole idea. Right, that this can be kind of the coolest family car or best dad supercar that exists. So I guess the only question is, would it really be GTS or would we have to go up a few trim levels for it to really make the number one spot?
No, GTS is perfect. I can't think of a better 911 that I've driven than this current generation GTS. Just like, it does everything so well, and it's really not that uncomfortable. Like I can definitely see putting a car seat back there, driving around and being comfortable with the kids back there. I absolutely love this car.
Super good.
Yeah. Some of our competitors have tested the GTS from 0 to 60 and hit 2.8 seconds. And that is supercar territory. Like I don't care that it's not a turbo or a GT3. That is absolutely a supercar number. And the reason you get a pass is because you've actually done the dad thing in a 911. Like, I don't think you can argue. I knew this was going to be your pick. I called it before you let us know. I knew this was going to be the one that you were going to pick because I saw the pictures of Jack's car seat in the back seat of this 911.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, that sways it too. Anytime you do anything like that, kind of like for real, it makes a memory, and then that memory sort of dictates, like it overrides the rational part of your brain a little bit too. But I still think that, you know, like having driven the GT3 RS, the new GT3 RS, that's probably the best 911 that I've ever driven, and maybe the best 911 that I will ever drive in my entire life from a 360 degree perspective. But I don't know that I would buy it today to live with it and drive it with my kids, right? It's a totally different animal. And there is something, it sounds crazy to say this about a, you know, what is it, $150,000 car, $130,000 car with a GTS, definitely six figures. It feels more honest and sort of a little bit more blue collar than you would expect, right? It's just easy to drive every day. I think that's what it boils down to. But cool. All right. Well, that's the list. Much value. Thanks everybody for hanging out with us. This is a little longer than normal. We appreciate it. For those of you who may prefer to listen to podcasts, please do look for us on iTunes, on the Google Play Store, on Spotify, on any of the other places that you get your audio podcasts. You can subscribe to us there. Click on subscribe to our YouTube channel so that you can get notified when we go live. We are here every Thursday at 2:30 Eastern time, 11:30 a.m. Pacific time, talking to you. That being said, we may have to pause next week because of the Monterey Car Week in Pebble Beach. Jeff and I are going to be out there, and we've got very busy schedules. So TBD on whether or not we're going to be able to go live next week, but we will figure it out.
Going to be a bunch of busy boys out there.
That's right. Lots of great stuff. Definitely. If you haven't checked out the site lately, go to MotorOne.com. Take a look. A lot of awesome debut posts. A lot of new stuff is going to be hitting over the next week as Monterey Car Week and Pebble Beach and the Quail and Rolex Motorsport Reunion and all that has turned into kind of one of the bigger auto shows of the year over the last few years. So really great stuff debuting in addition to all the auctions and classic cars and things like that. So check out the site. And yeah, we will see you next week. Thanks all.
Thanks for watching.
Bye, everybody.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.